Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Merry Christmas from all of us here at Connecting Faith and Faith Radio and how we live out our faith every day. Many people at this time of year are thinking generosity, and we're grateful for that because we at Faith Radio and University of Northwestern have benefited because of your support over the years. So I just want to say thank you up front for that. Our conversation today, we're going to talk about charitable giving, not because we're looking for you to make generous contributions to Faith Radio, but if you know God prompts you, that's absolutely wonderful. But now I want to talk about some general ways that we can be wise in being good stewards of what God's entrusted to us, and not only talk charitable giving, but looking at planning for the future, and certainly the new year just around the corner. So are there some things that we can do to maybe help our estate and get ready for that? And so with us today, back for another visit, we get together every quarter or two, I guess it seems. Kirby Stahl, Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern and Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation. And Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner and the Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And Kirby and Paul have been guests in the past, and it's great to see you guys again. Merry Christmas, Kirby.
Merry Christmas, Neil. And thanks
Paul,
for having us.
Good to have you here. Merry Christmas.
Good to be here. Good to see you, Neil.
So today, it's a time of year when we're thinking about year-end gifts, and you know, in talking with some people, say this is particularly for nonprofits and ministries. What the dollars that come in at the end of the year sometimes represent what 25 to 50% or so of their budget. Right?
Yeah, I would say several ministries that I'm involved in. December is a make it or break it month. Yeah. It's the month that when most of the revenue comes in, and so a lot of times the appeals happen in that month as well, where they're asking for money. So people are probably getting a lot of mail from a lot of charities and wondering, which ones do I support? And how do you know if it's a worthy ministry and how much to give?
Paul, I'm thinking, just first off, though, that's kind of hard for a budget planning, isn't it? If you got 25 to 50% of your revenue maybe coming in here in this month, that's hard to plan for next year.
Yeah, if you think about running your household that way, if you got, much of your income, whatever percent, but a large percentage of it you didn't get until the end of the year, that would make it hard to budget oftentimes for your family. So it's similar for ministries.
So just curious, why is it, are there other, are there motivating factors for year-end giving as opposed to, you know, why not June or August or April?
I think I know quite a few people who wait until December to make their larger gifts. And I think sometimes that's based on where their income is, or maybe where their assets are, or how the calendar year has gone. Then they realize that, oh, we can make some extra gifts, maybe some special non-regular gifts. I always try to encourage people to give throughout the year, though, you know, just knowing that the giving doesn't always have to wait until the end of the year.
Yeah, I think there are tax planning opportunities if you look at your and which I think is good stewardship. You know, if you can by making maybe a gift in the current year rather than waiting till next year because it drops you into lower tax bracket, you know, that's just tax efficient. That's good stewardship, I think. So I think that is a good thing for many people to do is to do an estimate of their tax situation. If people are salaried or on a fixed income, you know, they can just look at their previous tax year and see how it turned out. You know, things to ask their tax preparer, you know, at tax time, but then remember to look at it at the end of the year. For some people to circle back and talk to their tax preparer or their financial planner, you know, before the year end is good because, when you go in to see your tax preparer in, you know, March or April, you know, then, you know, there's less you can do. There's a lot of things that should have been done before the end of the year.
I think, too, that a lot of people look at the season of Thanksgiving and Christmas as the seasons of gratitude and giving. And this is a lot of people's opportunity to make a gift, to, you know, to bestow a gift on a place that needs some resources. Mm-hmm. This is a Christmas gift that they're giving.
Yeah. So the challenge there, I guess, would be, can we somehow extend that attitude of gratitude mm-hmm. and generosity and giving beyond that, the fourth quarter, you know, to where we're looking for opportunities. We have a generous heart year round. I think the more we can be generous all the time,
yeah,
is better.
And it's not just about taxes or those things, but those things are factors, right? And so, I mean, I guess as you said, Paul, was it just a matter of, you know, if we're coming to the year end, just looking at last year's kind of a statement and just say, hey, if we made some adjustments here, it's not a one to one, right? A dollar given isn't a dollar saved in taxes.
No, this can quickly get really complicated beyond the time that we have, but understanding a little bit about taxes is helpful for people and to get some help to get that understanding or read a little bit. But, you know, for some tax brackets are relatively favorable. And, of course, there's talk of tax reform. And, of course, there seems like that's a never-ending thing. So we'll see what happens. Tax laws change. But you know, if you make a gift and are able to deduct it on your Schedule A, if you itemize, you know, if you fall into a 25% tax bracket, you know, between state and federal, that probably it cost you 67 cents to give a dollar because you were able to save that 33 cents in tax. I'm rounding off there. However, if you drop below into a 15% tax bracket, you know, then that's 10% less. And, 25% is what, 40% more than 15%. So, well, that.
Yeah, numbers.
For those people that love math, that
sure.
They were enlightened. They were with you,
by the way. So, speaking of numbers, let me give out our phone number. I want to make sure that we give that out because you may have some questions today just as it relates to estate planning, just figuring out, you know, what the retirement looks like. We want to talk issues like annuities, charitable giving. How do we, you know, make the most of the resources that we have, and do we pass it all on to our family? How about the ministries that we really love and appreciate and want to support? You have some questions along those lines. I want to just open up the phone lines right now, and you're welcome to join in. It's 877-933-2484. That's the phone number. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you have a question for us, you want to just send it by email, you can go to myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there, and you can submit your question that way and be happy to get to today's conversation or get your questions answered here in the hour. Kirby Stahl and Paul Stein with us today. You know, I guess we often think it's cash, you know, gifts, liquid assets, but are there other options besides, you know, giving a year-end gift out of your savings or checking account?
Yeah, well, there are a ton of different things you can give. And a lot of times charities will accept everything from mm-hmm. cash to gifts of securities, stocks, bonds. Maybe you have a 100 acres that you aren't using mm-hmm. anymore. You could actually give that too, or a house. It just depends on how well equipped the charity is to receive a gift like that. And then sometimes there is timing and due diligence where it takes a while to make a gift of property versus you can write that check today or you can give online in this minute.
Yeah, so if you contact like Kirby next week and you have a piece of property that you'd like to gift this year, that might not be doable.
We may or may not be able to do that depending on when the county office is open to record that deed.
Sure,
But you do have a window. Some things would require more time. But the other thing to mention, like even with – so the thing to remember is appreciated assets, things that yeah. that where there's unrealized gain. So if it's a home that was bought back in the 50s, you know, and many people nowadays spend more on their last car than they did on their first home.
Yeah.
So – and they've maybe had it for a long time. You know, that would be an ideal potential charitable gift. Of course, if it's a residence and they've lived there, then that's probably excluded. But if you just think about things that have appreciated, gone up in value over the time you've owned it, then that's probably a good asset to consider to give.
Simply because it again the all the tax penalty isn't there, right? Or not as great, right?
Yeah, let's say a stock or a mutual fund that you had that you bought some number of years ago, and let's say it was worth $5,000 and now it's worth $12,000. So if you sell it and then you pay the tax on that gain, that $7,000, where if you gave a portion of that then to charity and they sell it, then nobody paid the tax on that amount that was gifted. So less went to tax, more went to the charity.
Mm-hmm. I do think, too, that a lot of people who have stocks and are familiar with giving that, that'll be their go-to. You know, they'll watch the market and they'll say, oh, the market's up. Our stock's appreciated. Let's give that. Some people, maybe this is the first time you're considering giving a gift that's not cash. We'd be great people to talk to just to say, how does that actually work? What's the impact of that on my taxes? How does that benefit charity? Who helps me make that gift happen? All those things. So,
yeah, and Kirby and his team—that's what they do, and that's what they specialize in. And they've helped clients of mine, they're trustworthy, and they know people to help out as needed. So, they're a great resource.
Yeah. Kirby Stahl is the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation and Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern. The Northwestern Foundation, established back in 1996 as a community foundation, works to facilitate the transfer of planned gifts that benefit Northwestern, University of Northwestern, Northwestern Media Programs, as well as other charities. And again, there's an opportunity for you to get some unbiased advice there from Kirby. Paul Stein as well will give you some great advice. He's the founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources, certified financial planner, and has been in the business here, I think, 30 or so years, and helping us to think through planning for the next stage of life. And we'd love to have you join our conversation. We're going to talk about things, not just non-cash gifts, but get into things like annuities and gifting to children. And we'll talk about ways to protect assets for the future and all those things, get into wills and estate planning. It's all coming up. You're welcome to join us, 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. It's 18 past the hour, and Connecting Faith today, we're talking about year-end giving, about some estate planning, and all related issues. We'd welcome your conversation as well. If you have a question, maybe something you've been wondering about, and just like a little clarification, you can join us at 877-933-2484. Paul Stein is a certified financial planner. He's founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. Kirby Stahl is the vice president of the Northwestern Foundation and senior director for advancement services at the University of Northwestern. And Kirby and Paul have been my guests over the past several years. And I always love to just get together and talk estates and the generosity and all those kinds of things. So we've talked a little bit about year-end giving. Kirby, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, things that we can do in terms of other income options, maybe, and talk about annuities. But Paul, we were just mentioning during the break that giving out of a retirement account is a possibility, right, for someone over 70? Is
that right? Yeah, that rule was just recently made permanent. So for a number of years, people couldn't rely on it if they were going to redo it or not. So it was kind of always down to the last minute. But now that that law was made permanent, at least for the time being, people over 70 can make gifts directly to charity from their IRA. And of course, if you make it directly from your IRA to the charity, then you don't claim the deduction on your Schedule A, let's say. So why would that be beneficial? Well, it might be beneficial for someone that doesn't have enough itemized deductions to itemize, so then they take a standard deduction, but then they could still benefit from making a gift directly to a charity from their IRA. The other thing that seems like we see more and more with clients is what clients pay for their Medicare Part B when they start Medicare. That has since 07, I believe, that has been means tested. So you pay more if you have higher incomes. And a lot of people, you know, some higher income retirees might already be mindful of that, but the base is like 105. But it can be up to three times that if you, based on your income, which can make a big difference. And we just were looking at someone's finances here, and they had gone over the modified adjusted gross income by just a little bit, and it changed both of their Medicare premiums by $50 each per month, which is $100 per month, $1,200. Yeah. And so if they would have, instead of taking the required minimum distribution as income and having that showed up, that's what pushed them over that next little tier. If they would have made, and they were already giving to charity, if they would have just given a little bit directly from their IRA, then it wouldn't have pushed them over, and it would have saved them $100 a month. And in some cases, it might be more than that. So it's something to be alert to. It's something to bring it to their attention of their plan or their advisor. And what happened here, and it is becoming, it's affecting more and more retirees or more people over 70. The gift to charity is only available to people over 70 and a half.
Yeah.
But they can they can potentially avoid that. But in 2011, they stopped the adjustment of these tax brackets, or the income levels going up. It used to have a cost of living adjustment, so now it's fixed. So as people's incomes do go up, it's gradually affecting more and more retirees. Yeah. That they're paying more, they're paying a premium for their Medicare, and there's some planning there.
Sure. And as we talked about the types of things you can give to charities, well, giving directly from your IRA is pretty simple to do. You call up your financial advisor, they'll have a form. It's a distribution to charity. The check is not made payable to you, it's made payable to the charity. You don't pay any taxes on that distribution, and the charity receives the funds just like they would a personal check or a credit card gift. And it's pretty simple to make.
Yeah, and the other situation where it can be potentially beneficial, if people, we have clients that have modest incomes, but they've been good stewards, and they've got quite a bit in their IRAs, and that required minimum goes up each year. And so they're maybe giving a fair amount away, but they're limited to how much you can deduct to 50%, depending on the charity. But most times, 50% of what they gave is all they can deduct, 50% of their adjusted gross income. So if they by giving, they can give up to $100,000 directly from their IRA, and not sometimes be limited in the tax benefit.
Mm-hmm. Does that minimum distribution start at 70 as well?
70 and a half. Yes.
Yeah. So that's something to consider, and they could do that sort of ongoing, even like a regular sort of an EFT kind of thing, or is it just a once a year sort of gift?
You know, everything I've heard, you can we receive gifts from IRAs throughout the year,
okay,
at varying amounts. It doesn't have to be any minimum amount. Typically, it's just whatever the person chooses to give. That required minimum distribution, if you don't need to take that, you can send it along to charity, and it won't touch your income taxes at all.
Yeah, that would only be limited by what the custodian limits.
Okay.
So they might be able to do it monthly, automatically, if the custodian allows.
Sure. Okay. You know, other thing, talking about retirement and, 70 and a half of things, people are always thinking about, all right, how am I positioned for retirement income? Now, Kirby, I think most every time we've chatted, we've talked a little bit about annuities and some opportunities there. Just say a bit more about that.
Well, so far we've been talking about gifts that you give now, and you part with them and you never see them again. There are a whole host of different types of charitable giving options where you can make a gift to charity and you can receive a charitable deduction to help out with your taxes. But you can also, at the same time, retain income or retain some rights. And so sometimes we'll consider a charitable gift annuity where you make that gift to a charity, and the charity promises to pay a fixed amount for the rest of your life. And whatever's left of that amount, principal amount that you first gave us when you pass away, that's what goes to the charity to help further the mission. A lot of times charitable gift annuities, charitable trusts offer higher rates of payment than you could ever get on a CD. And maybe you're not too inclined to invest in the stock market when you're in your 70s and 80s to the degree you might have been when you were in your 40s or 50s. So it helps, I think, balance income, balance a portfolio. If you think of a charitable gift plan like this as part of your investment portfolio. But again, a lot of things to consider along those lines.
So that that can be a really good fit for people that are charitable anyway, and they might even have some charitable plans in their estate, you know, where they're making some testamentary gifts to charities that they care about, and they need income. And with interest rates as low as they are, rates are real low, so it's hard to get much income from a lot of assets if I'm real conservative, and that's where the distribution rates on gift annuities are based on your age. And so if you look at what income that's available maybe from other low-risk investments versus a gift annuity, the gift annuity can provide substantially more income.
And our foundation and many other charities abide by the American Council on Gift Annuities. So we don't set our own rates. We go by the national rates. And those rates typically, whether you're in your 60s, 70s, or 80s, go anywhere from 4.5% up to 8%. Well, where are you going to get a fixed return at a CD or a bond or something when you know you need to have that income? Again, as Paul said, if you are charitably inclined and you want income, you might want to consider one of those charitable gift plans.
It'll break coming up here in a moment, but maybe it'd be a good time to just give out the website, or there's a toll-free number for the foundation?
I'll just give the website, unwlegacy.org. And you'll find many different examples, stories, testimonials. We even have calculators on that website where you can go and run your own illustrations in the comfort of your own home to see what one of those things looks like.
UNWlegacy.org. Mm-hmm. And Paul, do you have people come your way asking questions, or would you rather route them through Kirby? We can
That's fine. They can. Our website is www.advancedretirement.com. Right. And there's a contact us if a listener has a question. We've had people contact us with questions, and we'd want to help as much as we can.
Sure. Advancedretirement.com is the website. Paul Stein is the founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. They help individuals to work toward their ultimate financial goals through highly personalized financial planning and wealth management. Kirby Stahl is the vice president of the Northwestern Foundation. Again, you can find out more information there at unwlegacy.org. Kirby's also senior director for advancement services at the University of Northwestern. Kirby Stahl and Paul Stein in studio today, taking your questions. We're talking estate plans. We're going to get into gifting kids and, some documents that we should have for the new year, things that you meant to do this year, haven't gotten around to it. We'll review that just ahead. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. You can connect with us at 877-93-FAITH or send a question online and go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can email us your question. We'll get to it here in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. And we're spending a little time here before the end of the year and before Christmas talking about charitable giving and ways that we can be good stewards of the resources God has entrusted to us, and also do some wise planning as we head into the new year. Helping us do that, Kirby Stahl, vice president of the Northwestern Foundation, and Paul Stein is founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources in the studio today. And our phone lines are open at 877-93-FAITH, taking your questions. We're talking about charitable giving. Things that we can do while we're living, but on this earth, but there are opportunities to give after we pass as well. And maybe we should talk a bit about that.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about as we think about people, their charitable intent, and they have they support ministries now when they're alive, and when we pass away, do we want to still continue to provide some support to those charities. And a simple way that people do it is to draft it into their will. They go to an attorney and they say, we'd like to, you know, we've been tithing or more, you know, during life. And so we, in our estate, we want to do that, and it's drafted into the will. But sometimes life insurance, and that's not that it's a bad gift, you know, to have either a charitable policy, and that's another discussion where you can actually have the charity own the policy, and then the premium is deductible that you pay, and that can leverage a gift. If I die prematurely, that can be a significant gift that I if my life was cut short, you know, I didn't get to keep giving that. So, but not to overlook the benefit of making, we were talking about lifetime gifts from your IRA, especially for those over 70 and a half, but to make your charitable bequests in your estate from retirement accounts, from mm-hmm. IRAs, from traditional accounts. And the reason why, the simple way to understand that is, if I have a $100,000 life insurance policy, let's say, that goes to the charity, or I have $100,000 in my will that then goes to charity, that the charity gets the $100,000, but then my retirement accounts go to my kids, and they have to pay taxes on that. So that $100,000, they might pay, minimum $20,000, $30,000 or more. So a lot goes to tax. Where if they would have had that $100,000 go to the charities from their IRAs, all of it would have gone to charity. Then the kids get the non-retirement accounts or the assets through the will or the life insurance, don't pay tax on that, income tax, and more went to charity, more went to your kids, less went to tax.
That I can do that math. That makes sense. So go ahead.
Well, the other thing that's really neat about IRAs too is that it's so easy to change the charities. You know, over time, 5 years, 10 years, time passes, and charities that you would want to make gifts to might change. And if you do it in your will, you have to do an amendment or a codicil to the will, and that's a little bit more complicated. Not impossible, but more complicated. It's a lot easier just to fill out a new beneficiary form on the IRA and redirect to the charities that of your choosing.
I also think that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about estate planning and the will, keep in mind that having a will and passing assets through your will is done through a probate process, and that sometimes can be costly and time-consuming, whereas if you put a beneficiary designation on a life insurance policy, a retirement plan, a bank account, your home, all those things will go around the probate process and won't ever get caught up into that timely and cost-prohibitive process.
Is it, when we're thinking about how we want to continue our charitable giving, is it a matter of a percent? Is it a matter of dollars? Is it percentage? Is it just simply writing a, you know, some sort of attachment to a will or something that says, you know, if there's dollars left in my estate, I'd like, you know, X amount to go here? Or mm-hmm. I mean, how do people typically do that?
You know, a lot of times when I see a person's will, it'll have very specific instructions on what to do with certain types of assets, like the heirloom assets or the farm or whatever. And at the end, the last article says, and whatever else is left, which is usually some investments and other things, those are the things that get distributed to charities. And it's typically on a percentage basis. So whatever is left after all of my specific bequests and all of my obligations have been taken care of, the rest and residue goes then to charities or to other family members. And it's usually broken up percentage-wise, but it can be very specific, a specific dollar amount or a specific item or a number of shares or you name it.
Most beneficiary forms, the default is a percent.
Right.
So you look at but people can think in dollar amounts, you know, kind of how much would I want to go to these charities? And sometimes that's helpful because you put down the percents and then you translate that to dollars, and sometimes clients go, oh, wow, maybe that was more than they wanted to give to that charity, or they wanted to give. But usually the beneficiary forms call for percents, but whatever helps the person get the what they want to accomplish, sure, accomplished.
Well, we've been talking about charitable giving, that many of us have children who are our main charities, and we're supporting and helping them as much as we can. But let's talk about, there are opportunities to give gifts to children and gifting, and say a bit about that, maybe things that we should be aware of, maybe do's and don'ts or recommendations.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot to be said about taking care of your children. obviously, while I'm raising my children, I'm taking care of them. What's to say that I don't want to do that either when I pass away or when I'm growing older in my years? And so I think it's just a great opportunity to show good stewardship in how we treat our children with what we give them. Again, I've seen many examples of people saying, no, my children aren't going to receive a dime because I don't know that they will use it properly. To the other end of the spectrum where children receive everything. And then the question becomes, well, are all children equal? Do I give an equal percentage to every child, or maybe one child has some special circumstances, whether it's health related or other things that you might want to consider giving to a different amount? What I think is extremely important is that parents sit down with their children and just talk this through as much as possible, because I think when the parents are gone, the children are going to be the ones left together, and how are they going to react?
Yeah, we were just mentioned before the show started, you know, that most people think about preparing their estate, but do they adequately prepare their heirs for the estate? And of course, that needs to be age appropriate. If kids are 5, it's different than they're 30, than if they're 35. But to be mindful of how am I preparing my kids for whatever they're going to be receiving in the estate, and when they receive it. Kirby mentioned equal, you know, doing it equal. That's simple, but oftentimes simple isn't best. You know, so kind of like how we parent. If you have more than one child, you probably try to parent them as most appropriately for their personality and try to build character and help them develop and grow and come to know the Lord and all. And so spiritually, and so just like you parent differently based on the child, I think it is the challenge is thinking similarly in your estate. You know, what's the best for each of these children, and that might change over time.
And again, having the conversation, maybe not always easy to do, especially maybe with our parents' generation who, you know, weren't very forthcoming with those kinds of conversations. Any thoughts or recommendations on how that might get done?
All I'll say is I love to talk to my parents, and so it's easy for us to sit down and have a conversation and to start to get pretty deep in those conversations. But sometimes it requires me asking them to open up because it doesn't happen so naturally. And a lot of times there's distance that separates, whether it's physical or relational distance that separates, that doesn't make it too convenient. So I don't know if the holidays, this is one of those taboo subjects that no one ever talks about. But if you're together with family members, can you go for a walk? Can you have a talk with your parents on these things?
I guess at least to get an idea maybe where documents are, those kinds mm-hmm. of things.
Yeah, I think the fewer the surprises, you know, the better. You know, unknown oftentimes creates more fear and more anxiety. So a lot of our clients are older, and we've been helping them throughout their retirement. So we always encourage our clients, you know, as they're comfortable, and certainly if their capacities are maybe starting to diminish a bit, to start including one or more of their children in meetings and to bring them in so they know what's going on. And just like you would as aging parents, you go to the doctor, and you know, sometimes children then start going with to the doctor just for a second set of years to in case they forget. So I think it's on the aging parents to I would encourage them to start, you know, revealing things as they're appropriate to the children that they have, you know, trust and confidence in. And for children, you know, to also make an effort to broach that with their parents. You know, where are the documents? It's kind of awkward for kids because it, you know, it can be like, well, they're being selfish, so they want to know what they're going to get. And so you got to get over that. But to really, the more that there's transparency, that increases trust, and then there's fewer surprises, and then it oftentimes helps things go smoother as the kids as parents get older, and then when they pass away, the smoother that goes, the better, and usually that's when people are in the loop.
A lot of these documents too that we're talking about, the will or the trust, the power of attorney for financial matters, the healthcare directives. they are going to list who it is who's going to come in and take care of their affairs when they can't take care of them on their own. And a lot of times those are children. And so I think it would be a pretty awful surprise to find out that I was listed and I didn't know ahead of time about that. So
we'll talk a bit more about documents in a moment. I want to review those again. I do want to just maybe follow up, though. It was talking about maybe moving assets around or passing them on now. There's gift limits. So there's, what, $14,000 you can gift to a child or, I guess, grandchild or anybody?
Anybody. Well, there's unlimited gifts to your spouse, but, okay. But anyone other than your spouse, it's a $14,000 annual gift exclusion per individual. So if you have four kids, you could give up to $14,000 to each of them. If you're married, you and your spouse could each make those gifts. So you can, $14,000 might seem like quite limiting, but actually, depending on the family situation, you can do quite a bit of transferring of assets using that annual gift exclusion.
And again, you make that gift of $14,000 and you do not trigger gift taxes.
Correct. Yeah.
You're saving it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if someone gives more than that, there's not a gift tax that has to be paid typically, but there is a gift tax return that should be filed. So that's why if your tax preparer has a tax organizer, that should be one of the questions that they're asking, just to be alert to that. A lot of times people don't understand that.
Sure. Well, one of the things maybe related to that is that if you have aging parents and you know that there maybe is some assistance, medical, nursing home kind of situation coming, and you know there'll be a request for maybe county assistance, there's a look back of what, 5 years in terms of assets, right? So we help us. I mean, that's kind of your business all the time, I guess. Anyway, Paul, helping us take the long-term view. But what can we do to be thinking in terms of that 5-year look back window?
Well, you do have to be looking ahead, so a lot of times people wait too long, to do that kind of planning. And there again, and people might have different opinions of that, of, intentionally impoverishing yourself. But if you're working within the, what are the rules, what does the law allow, and what's the smartest way to position assets based on the family's priorities, there are things that can be done, but you kind of have to look down the road. If mom or dad, if you wait until they're going into the nursing home next month, then there's less opportunity for planning. So, but sometimes people aren't ready to gift. The way to protect assets is you have to irrevocably gift them either to a trust or to children. There's important considerations to that. Sometimes you solve one problem, you create other problems. So you do have to be careful and thoughtful and get good advice. And sometimes, that's a scary thought for someone that, to give major amounts or give everything that they have away. So that annual gift exclusion can be used to make some partial gifts, where you're doing things gradually and maybe so you're, you're hedging your bets and you're making some gifts along the way. You have a number of children and you're starting the gifting process. And if so, you might, and sometimes that's more palatable.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and come back and get more information with Paul Stein. By the way, if you want to find out maybe the resources that Paul can offer at Advanced Retirement Sources, you can go to advancedretirement.com, advancedretirement.com. Paul is the founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. Kirby Stahl is the vice president of the Northwestern Foundation here at the University of Northwestern. And you can find out more of the resources available and the help available there as well at unwlegacy.org, unwlegacy.org. And we'll talk with Kirby and Paul more in just a moment. We are going to review how we get our documents together and maybe some thoughts about the wise planning for the new year. That's all coming up here on Connecting Faith. Our phone number is 877-933-2484, and the lines are open if you'd like to join in.
Christ is come. Let all create.
listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected again with Kirby Stahl, who's the Senior Director of Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern in St. Paul and Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation. Ann Paul Stein is a Certified Financial Planner and Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And we're talking about planning, year-end giving, estate planning, some of those things. We mentioned, just kind of touched on before the break a little bit about documents. So let's talk about those must-have documents that we should have compiled for a responsible estate plan. We're coming up to the end of the year. We still have some time to get our house in order in that way. But what are the things that we must have or should have get started on?
Well, I think initially for the person who wants to plan their estate and passing along their assets and their values, you know, those are typically the will or the revocable trust, and it is usually good counsel to seek a professional in drafting those, depending on what state you live in, what your age and stage of life is. The will for a person who has young children can appoint guardians to take care of them if, in fact, they pass away while they still have minor children. But for the person who is well along in years, it might build into the document paragraphs that for the beneficiaries of the assets to say, and this is why I am giving this asset to you.
Yeah. Most people think of the will when they think of their estate plan and I get my will done and then I'm done. That is important, and probably the most important thing about it with minor children is naming guardians. You know, otherwise some judge is going to name who raises your children. So that's for people with minor children, that's the most important thing. Your will is your instructions to the probate court. And so things that don't pass through probate, the will doesn't take care of anything. So anything where you've named a beneficiary, unless you named your estate, but if you put somebody's name on a beneficiary line, whether it was life insurance or an annuity or a retirement plan, your will doesn't have anything to do with that. So an important part of your estate plan documents is your beneficiary designations. And for some people, that's a big part of their estate. You know, it might be their house and their retirement plans and their life insurance policies are the biggest things. So some of that won't even go through the will, because it doesn't go through probate. Kirby mentioned earlier about, or in passing anyway, I caught it, was with you can name beneficiaries on property by a transfer on death deed, and that's where you can actually name a beneficiary, and that's a very simple way to avoid probate for real property. But then you have to understand that and be careful. It depends. You know, so for some people, that's a real simple way. For other people, a better solution would be to use a trust.
I think those other documents that we talk about are the durable powers of attorney for your financial matters. And then really, you know, what could happen to any of us any minute of the day is those medical matters and having the healthcare directive if you have a diagnosed condition that you're receiving treatment and you're potentially more up in years, there's a document called the Provider Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, PULST. And that is that does give your doctor directions on how you should be treated given the condition you have.
Yeah, and that's for listeners that either their parents are in a retirement community or assisted living or nursing home, and hopefully they've talked through that with their doctor. My parents passed away a few years ago, and my mom, my sister and I were her healthcare agents. She had a healthcare directive, but the first responders got there before my sister or I could, and they were trying to resuscitate her. When that was not her desire. So if they had this document that Kirby just mentioned, that PULST document, and that at the residence or wherever they are, then that wouldn't happen. So that's an important document.
Which brings up, I guess, where do we keep these documents? And maybe who should have them? Is it something where we make copies and just we have them in our safe deposit box? That's not always, yeah, I guess, accessible.
Well, I know where mine are. They're in a fireproof box in the basement, okay. But you don't know that.
Okay.
So I think the best solution would be, do you want to put it on your refrigerator? Do you want to have a special envelope on top of the counter or whatever the case is? And notifying the people who you want to provide this care, whether that's a child or a close relative or friend or your doctor, you know, make sure that when it is coming more time to the end of your life that you really notify people.
Yeah, that they know where it is. So like for your health care directive, power of attorney, those a lot of times are needed in an emergency situation. So whoever you've named that they have a copy is helpful, or they can get a copy very quickly. They know where it is in the home. Most importantly is that they have quick access to it. And a copy is as good as the original with a power of attorney or healthcare directive.
I was thinking, just you talked about the beneficiary designations. Is that something where you probably want to have, if you have several, you put them all together just in a folder? So you, or are there just, is it simply just building your own document on that so you have listed?
Well, it seems like more on statements now. Sometimes they will list okay. the beneficiary that they have on record with no details, but just by name. Or if you have a retirement plan through an employer, sometimes you log in and it'll show who's named as your beneficiary. So you could be as simple as verifying with the institution who the current beneficiaries are and putting a post-it note on the annuity or the life insurance policy and maybe dating it just so you know. Sometimes things get changed. Sometimes things get forgotten. And there might be a beneficiary designation when the life insurance policy was taken out years ago and then it's been changed and people forget.
I do know, too, that if you do have a personal financial advisor, they might know everything there is to know about your financial situation, so that if you pass away or are incapacitated, that if you have their number, call them, and they probably will be able to help you out in a great way. I also know of people who make a list of all of their assets and just to try to simplify things.
Yeah, we take that on. I mean, for our clients, we keep track of all that. We want to review that periodically with clients, that. So if something happens to them, whatever they wanted to happen, happens.
Yeah. All right. We've only got about a minute and a half left. One thing to do here to make 2017 better, maybe it's collecting documents, it's having a conversation. What would you say?
I think I go back to how we started the program. This is the season of giving good gifts. And sometimes those are monetary gifts and sometimes those are passing along the love of Jesus. I asked my kids this morning, what's the best gift to give? One kid said candy. One kid said the love of Jesus. And so that's my parting comment.
All right.
Yeah, the good news of the gospel is the most important thing we can share with anybody, certainly our kids, loved ones. So that's most important. Your eternal plan is infinitely more important than your estate plan. I would encourage, people, listeners, that if everything is important, nothing's important. So try to, if they're thinking about an overwhelming thing, number of things to do, is just say, okay, what are the two or three things that I'm gonna do, and try to do it. So I have a short list, no more than three things that you're gonna try to get done in the first quarter of 2017.
All right. Well, blessings to you both in 2017, and we look forward to having you back again with us. Kirby Stahl is the Vice President for the Northwestern Foundation. Paul Stein is Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. You can find out more at the Foundation by going to the website unwlegacy.org, unwlegacy.org. Paul can be reached at advancedretirement.com. That's advancedretirement.com. Paul and Kirby, great to see you guys. Merry Christmas. Blessings to you.
Thank you, Neil. Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Connecting Faith, and if you missed part of today's program or want to pass it on to a friend, we post all our interviews on the show page at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, myfaithradio.com, and click on Connecting Faith to find the podcast archives.